Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Our weekly SDPB Legislative Roundtable brings journalists from across the state together for a look at what's happening in Pierre. Today, we're joined by SDPB Seth Tupper in Rapid City, Jackie Hendry in Sioux Falls, Stephanie Ristler in Vermilion, and Lee Strubinger hopes to join us. He's in committee right now, later on, from Pierre. So let's say welcome from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio to Seth Tupper. Hey, Seth.
Hey, how's it going?
And Jackie's here with me. It's going well. Thank you. Jackie's here with me in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Welcome back, Jackie.
Thanks, Lori.
And Stephanie is joining us from the campus of the University of South Dakota in SDPB's Vermilion Studios. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
All right. Let's go to Rapid City first. And Seth, let's talk about Senate Bill 92, which is about this Star Academy facility in Custer.
Yeah, so the background on this, if people aren't familiar with it, there was a facility, quite a big campus of 173 acres and multiple buildings right outside of Custer that was called the Star Academy, and it was a juvenile detention and treatment center for troubled youth. And the state closed the facility in 2016 amid movement for juvenile justice reform and changing the way that we deal with kids in crisis and kids that are in trouble. They closed it and they sold it in 2017 on a contract for deed for about $2 million to this corporation that at the time nobody knew much about. Turned out maybe the state should have known more about that corporation because the corporation defaulted on some payments to the state last year. The state had to go in and repossess the entire campus. And so the state now owns that campus again. And there are some people who live there on some houses that were formerly used for staff housing. And there were some people that had businesses that moved into to the campus, and they were all given up to March to move out. And so the question now is what to do with that facility. And I think the governor's preference and some others in state government is to put it back up for sale. But there's a group of legislators out here in the Black Hills that's been really devoted and committed to wanting to put that campus back into use as a juvenile detention and treatment center again. And they have a bill, Senate Bill 92, as you mentioned, to basically stop the governor from selling the facility and require her to come up with a plan for repurposing it. Hmm. And one of those legislators is Lance Russell from Hot Springs. And this is what, well, I should, to set up the clip from him, he talked in committee last week about how the Star Academy, what in his opinion, was working to help kids. And here's what he said about it.
And it really gave them a chance in life. Well, now, I don't know if you've been hearing this from your school administrators, but essentially what's happening is these people are being sentenced to school because we have no place to put them. Very short-sighted on our part. And the schools are really having a serious difficulty.
And Seth, this is something since 2016 people have been telling us on this program as well, that the system wasn't necessarily set up after the closure of STAR to handle what would come next. So what comes next?
Correct. And the people who've been saying that have been getting some resistance on the other side in the committee hearing last week. Some of that resistance came from Mike Leidholt, who's the Secretary of Corrections in the Nome administration. And he said that, you know, they have about 100 kids still placed in juvenile facilities, but the state doesn't own any of those facilities anymore. Those are contract care facilities, basically. And he said if the state ever was going to build another juvenile detention treatment facility, it would be smaller, more centrally located than the Star Academy is in Custer, because he said they had trouble recruiting staff to work in rural Custer. They had trouble maintaining a big old facility that some of it is 100 years old, some parts of the campus. And so he argued vociferously against repurposing this facility, and here's what he had to say in the committee.
So I think for in the best interest of the taxpayers of South Dakota, it's best not to have that ongoing expense, plus turn this over to a use that could potentially be on the tax rolls of Custer County and bring some benefit to Custer County.
And that echoes what Danny Kamek used to say, the former secretary of the Department of Corrections. They don't want to go backwards. So here's my main question is, this is a conversation, it's 2020 right now, and this is a conversation we've had pretty much every legislative session since Star Academy closed. That institutional knowledge is gone. Those employees were let go. Is there traction for a bill like this to sort of block the sale of this property that nobody really wants to buy?
Well, it seems doubtful. The bill did pass out of the Senate State Affairs Committee on a 5-4 vote, so on a very slim margin. And we have to remember that just a few years ago, a majority of the legislature passed a bill directing the administration to sell this facility. So it doesn't seem like the support would be there, but there is, as you noted, you know, people do keep talking about this need. Some legislators say they're hearing out from their constituents about, you know, we need better options for some of these kids that maybe need to be detained or need treatment or whatever, and they just don't feel like they have those options. So if enough legislators come around to that viewpoint, maybe it would get traction. But again, a majority of the legislature did just agree not too long ago that they wanted to sell this facility. And that law is still on the books, that the facility must be sold. Hmm. That would only change if they pass this new law.
Now all they need is a buyer for 173
right.
beautiful acres of Black Hills property, yeah.
And when they put it up the first time, they had to put it up multiple times for sale because they didn't get enough interest. Finally, the one entity that was interested and willing to pay $2 million turned out to be somebody who couldn't afford it and actually bounced a $117,000 check to the state
right.
for a payment. So,
right.
So yeah, it's been a big problem.
How much is this costing the state on a annual? Do we have an idea of it? It's costing the state something to have it on the rolls.
That did come up in committee. I don't remember the figure.
Yeah.
I do recall that Mike Leithold said there are two employees, I think one full-time and maybe one part-time, or maybe they were both full-time, but that are just devoted to caring for the campus and fixing leaks and making sure the heat's working and all that kind of thing.
Wow. All right, let's talk about sports gambling. This is something else that seems like we've been talking about since Attorney General Marty Jackley was in office.
Yeah, so the background on this is, you know, for a long time, sports gambling was basically illegal most places except basically Las Vegas. And there was a state, New Jersey, that challenged that federal law, and in 2018 won that challenge at the Supreme Court level. And since then, some states have been legalizing sports gambling in their own states. And an example is Iowa, where I checked, and they legalized sports gambling in Iowa last year. In just the first month of betting there, they took in $40 million in wagers. So
wow.
That's the potential, you know, size of this industry. There was a bill last year to try to legalize sports gambling in South Dakota, and it didn't pass out of the legislature. Here in South Dakota, unlike in some other states, there are laws on gambling in our state constitution, so we would have to actually amend the constitution to allow this. And so therefore, the legislature would have to put this on the ballot, and that's what this year's bill tries to do again. And that bill passed out of committee 5-2 last week. And there was Roger Tellinghuysen is a lobbyist for the Deadwood Gaming Association, and he explained to legislators on the committee that this essentially only sends it to voters. Here's what he said.
It presents to the voters of South Dakota an opportunity to tell you as the legislature whether or not they would like to have the opportunity to place wagers on their favorite sports, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, what have you. That's the only thing that this bill will do. It won't implement it. That will be up to the legislature to do. You as the legislature will decide if the voters of South Dakota approve this amendment, how it will be implemented, where it will be implemented, and under what circumstances.
Interesting. And somebody else could do that outside the legislative. I mean, you could do a petition for a ballot measure, too?
Yeah, I suppose they could.
In theory, yeah. It's for sports gambling. If this doesn't pass the legislature, it could come from a different you know, advocacy group.
I would guess so, yeah. I haven't researched that, but then, of course, it's natural to come from the legislature because they have to make the rules on it. And that is one thing that I think is probably confusing to people, is that this isn't just necessarily about Deadwood. There's a lot of talk that Deadwood would be the center and the headquarters for this, but mm-hmm. there's also talk that possibly you could, you know, place sports bets on your mobile phone or at your local sports bar in Sioux Falls or Rapid City or wherever. They'd have a kiosk where you could place a sports bet, and it would all perhaps be run through Deadwood, but could actually be statewide if the legislature would decide to go that way.
Oh, that's really interesting. All right. Last week we talked about the red flag bill. That was Senate Bill 81. That went down, didn't it?
Yeah, that went. Yeah. That got defeated in committee, and it was an interesting debate, and it brought out all the sides of the gun issue yet again. That we seem to have this debate over and over, but it was interesting that Arthur Rush, he's a former judge and he's also a Republican. He's from Vermilion. He brought this bill, and essentially it would have created what a lot of people call a red flag law. He called what he was trying to create risk protection orders, where essentially if law enforcement does an investigation and finds out somebody is a risk to them, to the safety or life of themselves or others, they could go to a court and get one of these orders from a judge and temporarily seize that person's firearms. And there was quite a lengthy debate about it in committee before it got voted down. Here's what the sponsor, Arthur Rush, had to say about it.
I brought this bill to get a discussion going about that issue. What can we do to address that issue? It does not resolve the problem to close our eyes and pretend that it's not a problem. Is anyone so delusional that they think we won't have more shootings in South Dakota at some point in time? I'm sure that we will hear lots of opponents, but do any of them have suggestions about how to solve the problem? I don't want to hear about more killings in South Dakota and wonder why I didn't try to do something about them.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the other side, there were, equally impassioned testimony. There was Brian Gosch, is a former legislator and now a lobbyist for the NRA. He testified against the bill. So did Lieutenant Governor Larry Roden. And here's what the Lieutenant Governor had to say about the bill.
And on behalf of the governor, I'm asking you to defeat Senate Bill 82. Plain and simple, red flag laws do not work, and they are unconstitutional. Everyone here should know that red flags violate our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. But many of you may not realize that they also violate our Fourth Amendment right to protection against unreasonable search and seizure, and our Fifth Amendment right to due process.
Seth, what happens next with this? Is this something that comes up again? Do you think there's an appetite to sort of deal with this modified red flag law in South Dakota?
Well, that'll be up to Senator Rush. As you heard in the clip, he said he wanted to get the discussion going, so that indicates he didn't have much of a hope for passage this year. He did get one other vote besides his in the committee from Craig Kennedy, who's a Democrat from Yankton. And Senator Kennedy actually applauded Senator Rush's courage in bringing this bill as a Republican and getting the discussion going. So it wouldn't surprise me if he brings it back, because unfortunately, as he said, there'll be more shootings and this will still be on our mind. And, this is one of those efforts to try to deal with it. But
And every time we talk about, school gun violence, for example, people bring up the suicide rate in South Dakota with firearms as well. So this isn't just protecting innocent victims that are strangers. It's also looking at, how do you remove weapons from someone who, is a harm to themselves.
Exactly. And Senator Rush did bring that very issue up in the committee and had some of his testimony was about that we have a high suicide rate in South Dakota, and that this isn't just about school shootings or mass shootings, but it's about other kinds of shootings. It's about suicide. It's about gun violence in general. And he stressed that he's not an anti-gun person. He owns guns. He's a hunter, et cetera. But he just felt like we have a violence problem that we need to deal with.
Yeah, we're going to bring Jackie Hendry into this conversation because she's been following legislation looking at funding the school sentinel training, and that has to do with gun violence as well. Jackie, tell us a little bit about the background for this, because it coincides with the background for what Seth was just talking about.
Yeah, it does. So in the 2013 legislative session here in South Dakota, the legislature passed a bill allowing school sentinels. This was right after, of course, the Sandy Hook school shooting in Connecticut. And the prime sponsor of the bill this year is Representative Dale Hammack, and he says in those 7 years since the law allowing school sentinels, only 14 staff members of schools in South Dakota have gone through that training program offered by the Law Enforcement Academy. So seven years, 14 people gone through that training. He believes cost is part of that issue. He says between fees and travel, it can cost about $1,500 per person to go through that training, and there would be a maximum of even 30 individuals going through that training per year.
Sure. All right. So what does this bill do to address that problem?
So saying we meet that maximum total of 30 students per year, that every class is full, this bill proposes establishing a fund that would come from the state's Department of Education to reimburse schools for that $1,500 per individual going through that training for a maximum total per year of $45,000. Representative Hammack says this training would be especially helpful in rural schools. He mentioned five rural schools in Meade County, where he used to live, where response times from law enforcement are much longer.
The best response time, dry roads, sheriff's deputy responding is an hour and 45 minutes to get to Opal or Atoll. It's about an hour and a half to go to Union Center, depending on where the starting point is. So it's not like there's a quick response time. Now, the event that occurred at Newtown, Connecticut, police were on scene in 5 minutes. They didn't enter the building for another 4 minutes. The shooting was over in less than 5 minutes.
Jackie, tell me about the opposition to this legislation. What'd you hear?
Well, Secretary of Education Ben Jones brought opposing testimony on multiple counts, the first being that if you're using funds from a state department to reimburse school districts, then you don't necessarily have that protection of potential assailants not being able to see which schools have trained sentinels. So here's part of Secretary Jones's testimony there.
If this bill passes as written, the transparency that we all value would mandate that the Department of Education put on South Dakota OpenSD the transmission of funds between the department and the school district. So probably within 20 to 30 minutes, a person who's looking at that website could tell that one school district is participating while another one is not.
And Secretary Jones also notes that South Dakota's Department of Public Safety actually recently won a school safety grant from the federal government, and that may bring an even better system than this to train school sentinels and things like this. Other opponents focused more on the kind of financial priorities we're setting in our school environment. So Rob Munson with the School Administrators of South Dakota made this point, which was echoed by several of the other opponents.
We feel this money would be far better used buying geography books or geometry books and not Glocks.
So again, referencing that $45,000 a year, potentially, assuming all classes are full, that would be there to train school sentinels. So the House Education Committee took up this bill again. There was conversations about what this funding is actually used for. Would it actually pay teachers? Would it actually buy books and things like this? But they found a fund that would feasibly be used specifically for school safety. The committee ended up passing the bill with a do pass recommendation just this morning. So this funds for school sentinel training moves one step closer. So it goes to the House floor.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. We've got Seth Tupper and Jackie Hendry and Stephanie Ristler right now, all South Dakota Public Broadcasting journalists, giving you the update on what's happening in Pierre. Lee Strubinger is in the committee hearing for House Bill 1057, which is that bill to ban the treatment of gender-affirming care in South Dakota. He'll bring us the results of that. They should be voting soon in Pierre on that. We are going to take a break. We're going to come back with more of this roundtable in just a moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh, and today we have our South Dakota Public Broadcasting journalists from across the state joining us for an update on what's happening in Pierre. Seth Tupper is with us from Rapid City, and Jackie Hendry is in Sioux Falls. Stephanie Ristler is in Vermilion. Lee Strubinger is in Pierre, and he's been following the House Bill 1057 vote. But I want to go first to Stephanie Ristler, because, Stephanie, you say there's an update on that gender-affirming care vote coming out of Pierre as we speak.
They did. They had an original motion to send it to the 41st day. A substitute motion then came in by Senator Lance Russell for a do pass. That failed on a 2-5 vote. So as I see it right now, they are back to the original motion to send it to the 41st day, which essentially will kill the measure. So I know our team is there, including Lee, as you mentioned. We're able to... Bill moved to the 41st day, just came in on a 5-2 vote. So Senate Health has killed House Bill 1057 by a vote of 5-2 to send it to the 41st day.
All right. Breaking news there on House Bill 1057 for listeners. I want to stick with you, Stephanie, because this bill itself has been something that has been talked about a lot in the state legislature and in the state of South Dakota and across the country. And you've been kind of following how lawmakers feel about that and feel about some of the issues that are in the front of the line in peer state legislatures today. Tell us a little bit about what the leadership is saying.
Well, at the end of each week, our leadership will have a press briefing to answer questions, share their thoughts. And on Friday, our House Minority Leader, Jamie Smith, spoke to the media, and he wanted to address some of the things that are frustrating to the Democrats. He laid out a number of bills, including House Bill 1057. He thinks some of these bills, they put South Dakota in a bad light, and they send a very unwelcoming message.
The governor had a speech that said we're open for business in the state of South Dakota. And that's something we could agree on. We want this to be a business-friendly state. We want this to be a place that welcomes people, new businesses. But now when we see all the bills that are dropped, we have so many bills that make South Dakota look like a place that's not welcoming. It's not a place that says, hey, come here, start your business here, bring your family here. You know, we had 1057 that already made it through the House that was dealt with, you know, trans people. Yesterday in the House, there was a surrogacy ban, so people with fertility issues right now, that bill, upsetting. Then we had, we have a Bill 1215, outlawing gay marriage. It's going backwards here for the state of South Dakota.
Yeah, Stephanie, go ahead, because this is, and again, for listeners who are just tuning in, House Bill 1057 that Jamie Smith refers to in that clip has now been defeated in the Senate. So, but one of the criticisms that you hear frequently is if the legislators or lawmakers are spending that much time talking about one thing, there's things that they aren't talking about. What did Representative Smith have to say about that?
Well, one of the bills that's coming up has to do with vaccinations. That's another issue that he's having some frustrations with. And yes, absolutely frustrated with the fact that there are bills that are impacting people that need jobs and insurance, state employee issues, where we are with funding. All of that was brought up and how they would like to have more conversations in the legislature about those issues that are impacting people every day and put some of these social issues to rest that are taking up so much of everybody's time out there. So, yeah, that absolutely was something that was brought up. There's a bill expected to come up later this week. It's House Bill 1235, and as I mentioned, it's dealing with vaccinations. And from what we can see and what I've been able to read from the bill, it says that no person may be discriminated against for refusal to accept an unwanted medical intervention, including immunizations.
Vaccinations. To not have vaccinations in our state. We've seen what this does in other places around our country. I don't want measles to come back. I don't want polio to make a resurgence. South Dakota, we vaccinate our cattle even. What about our families? This is frustrating. This is not good for the state of South Dakota. And I think the only way that changes is by changing who is here.
All right. So what do Republicans have to say, Stephanie, in response to some of this impassioned frustration from Representative Jamie Smith?
They did. They were asked about their thoughts on the Democrats' frustration and what they think moving forward will look like in terms of legislation coming up. Representative Lee Quam, he spoke to that frustration in the soundbite.
It's unfortunate that it seems like these social issues just do grab a lot of air. It's just the nature of the subject. We got the hemp bill passed out of House Ag yesterday. We passed a couple good voter registration dealing with some of that for the Secretary of State that I think is vital for everyone. So we've done some really good things this week, and I hope we can focus on the really good things that we've been done. And I know social issues are important, but there's a lot of other things out there.
Stephanie, it's a lot of that focus is coming from the people of South Dakota as well, because they care passionately about some of this legislation and are hoping to speak up about it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about that hemp bill that he mentioned. Where is that?
He did mention it, and that was passed out of committee last week. It's expected to come up on the House floor today. But part of the issue is there wasn't a lot of specifics regarding funding this program. The governor's office has said they expect it to cost about $3.5 million to fund it. Representative Quam, who is one of the main sponsors of the bill, he shared some of his insight on the funding program. However, during that same press conference immediately following, Senate Majority Leader Chris Langer disagreed. Here's both of their comments.
And that $3.8 million is coming. It is going to be put right into the budget, so we don't have to come up with those dollars. And the funding is coming from where the State Patrol currently gets their funding. So we've really got a lot of that taken care of, so that's really not going to be an issue.
Well, I guess I have a different opinion on that. I don't think that's been decided yet. I think we'll need to work with appropriators and find out where we're going to find that money. That was my last conversation with my my chair of APROP. So I think there is some balls in the air as far as where that funding is going to come from.
Stephanie, there's a whole lot happening there. You can read between the lines and also just, look directly at some of the things that are being said. It's not a given.
No, it's not. And as I mentioned, it is expected to be debated today. Of course, we can all listen to it at SD.net and figure out where some of those issues are for lawmakers, what we might hear from appropriators. I think there's a lot of decisions yet to be made with House Bill 1008.
All right. So as Stephanie mentioned, SD.net is where you can find all your coverage. Listen.sdpb.org. Throughout the day, we'll be updating you on the latest stories. And if you didn't hear the breaking news from Pierre that House Bill 1057 has now been defeated in the state Senate. I want to go back here to Sioux Falls to bring Jackie Hendry back into our conversation, because there's quite a few other pieces of legislation that are also making their way through the State House as we speak. And one of these that you were looking at was dealing with cameras in nursing home facilities. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this bill would creates guidelines for family members or residents of nursing homes or assisted living facilities in our state to install surveillance cameras in their rooms. And there's a variety of guidelines to that. If you have a roommate, then you would need the roommate's written permission. The camera couldn't go into a bathroom. It would have to be in the main living space of that room, and various things like this. The prime sponsor of this bill is Representative Tina Mullally, and in her testimony to the House Health and Human Services Committee when this bill was first introduced, she explained kind of her thought process of a few other reasons why this bill might be needed beyond just the protection against perhaps elder abuse.
With House Bill 1056 video monitoring, the burden of a possible loss of income due to time off from work to travel would be reduced, or guilt felt by family members for not having routine visiting schedules could be eased by knowing that viewing the daily activities of their loved ones is only a click away.
So the idea being, if especially in rural parts of the state where the closest nursing facility could be anywhere from 50 to 100 miles away, maybe you're not able to visit your loved one quite so frequently, but you have that camera in the room to check up and make sure that grandma's being taken care of, and maybe that's helpful to families.
All right, tell us about how the debate went on the House floor.
Right, so this bill passed with no opponents in committee, but that changed on the House floor. Some of those opponents had concerns about privacy. Of course, this is an optional thing for families. It's not mandated. But Representative Schwach had other concerns that this bill would bring uneven care for nursing home residents. He points out that 55% of nursing home residents in South Dakota are paying by Medicaid, which is reserved for lower income folks. And here's what he pointed out when he notes that probably only the wealthier residents of nursing homes would be able to afford this option in the first place.
Who do you think the nurses are going to pay more attention to when they're giving care to all their residents? Is it the ones that don't have a camera watching them the whole time? Or is it the ones that do have a camera in the room that's being recorded?
But then the other side of that coin from a proponent, Representative Tamara St. John, her nieces are CNAs in Minnesota, which itself recently passed guidelines for cameras in nursing homes. And she asked one of her nieces for her opinion on bringing cameras into the facilities.
And she said, I think it's very good because some of the people that work in our nursing homes are mean, and that it's a way of ensuring that they maintain a certain standard, knowing that they're going to be watched.
Now, Minnesota is kind of an example of what happens in a state without any kind of statutory policy when it comes to cameras in nursing homes. That example, a family in Minnesota put a camera in their family member's home. The facility found the camera and removed it, which started off a few years of legal wrangling until they passed this kind of policy. And that's what Representative Mullally is hoping to establish here.
So this notion that you want to circle back to something you said earlier about how many nursing homes have been closing and what that looks like in South Dakota, something you've been covering for quite some time, was a big issue in last year's state legislative session. So tell us about how those conversations about Medicaid funding are playing into this topic.
Right. I haven't heard the same focus on increasing Medicaid funding here in South Dakota this year that I did last year. But Representative Schwach adds that this camera bill doesn't necessarily get to the root of the issue when it comes to Medicaid funding in nursing homes.
I'm sympathetic to those family members who can't see their family because they're in a nursing home far away. You know how we could fix that here in South Dakota is adequately funding our nursing homes so they don't have to close and they don't have to be moved far away.
Now, Schwach and others who reached the same opinion, saying, you know, if we increase Medicaid funding or Medicaid reimbursement rates, I should say, even more than we did last year, then maybe these facilities would be able to hire a not mean CNAs. They would be able to entice better qualified folks to those positions, or even those rural facilities would be better able to keep their doors open and family members wouldn't have to move so far away. But ultimately, this bill to allow cameras in nursing homes and assisted living facilities passed the House floor in a 56-11 vote and moves next to the Senate committees.
All right. You've also been covering some education legislation. Let's start with beaded graduation caps and the significance of this conversation.
Right. So this starts with Representative Sean Bordeaux. In years past, he's brought legislation to allow eagle feathers or eagle plumes on high school graduation caps for Native American students. This year, he brought another bill that would allow honor songs and then beaded graduation caps during those high school ceremonies. So opponents were largely opposed to mandating honor songs as part of a graduation ceremony. Bordeaux quickly offered an amendment to strike that, which left only the beaded graduation caps. And that still ultimately left the committee to debate at what point things need to be legislated in peer and how much should be left to the local school boards to decide for themselves what they do and don't want to allow.
All right, how'd that conversation play out in the debate?
Well, some members were concerned with what about non-Native students who bead or paint or otherwise decorate their caps. And one of those questions from Representative Reimer, to Representative Bordeaux, wondering if he would be open to decorations representing her culture or another culture. And here's his response.
We are talking about my culture, though, here. And this isn't about potentially any culture that could be. You know, I struggled with the bill the first time because tribal regalia was something that people couldn't wrap their heads around. So I had to remove some of the wording so it was a little more easier for people to get their head around. And here, again, I think you're working it too hard.
But when pressed, Representative Bordeaux said, of course, I would be okay with a Scandinavian or German student decorating their caps, but his focus is for Native students.
And his point there is you're asking me to stand in for a whole lot of people here by even asking that question.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So tell us about this idea of what needs to be set in state law and what can be decided by local communities. How did that play out?
Well, Representative Bruner, in both this bill and one that we may have time for yet, says that when it comes to these local issues, really it should be up to these communities. And if it takes maybe a lawsuit or something else to change those attitudes about what to allow, maybe that's for the best.
They need to evolve and learn a few things on their own. And sometimes it's going to take a lawsuit from ACLU or somebody to do that. And I think, you know, I would rather see that than impose a state law that requires everybody to follow something. And sometimes I think it could backfire on us.
And Jackie, you and I were talking earlier, this notion of when things should be legislated and when they should be dealt with in the courts, which is something kind of interesting you see lawmakers grappling with, as a lot of Americans are. What did Representative Bordeaux say after this bill was tabled? It's dead in this session, but he had a message on the way out the door for his fellow lawmakers.
Right. Well, the beta graduation caps isn't tabled. That has actually moved through that committee without a recommendation and is moving to the House floor. The one that did get tabled was a bill to prohibit the use of racially derogatory mascots or athletic team names and nicknames that we don't quite have the time to dive into today, but will come in a later story. But for both of these bills and both of these discussions, Representative Bordeaux assured the committee and opponents that this issue is not resolved.
I'm going to keep coming and bringing this stuff back every year. And if I'm not doing it, I'm going to compel somebody that I trained to do this job to do it as well. So this isn't going to be an issue that goes away.
Another common theme, Seth Tupper, Stephanie Rissler, these are themes that you've heard throughout your time covering session as well. Stephanie, some of these issues do come back again and again, don't they?
They do. Sometimes it takes several years for them to gain that traction. Absolutely.
Seth, any comments on legislation that we see frequently? Yeah, in 30
seconds. You were commenting
seconds.
When we were talking about the Star Academy. I did my internship about 20 years ago at the legislature, and they were talking about the state training school then, and unfortunately a girl died there, and we're still talking about juvenile justice today and how best to do it.
Right, which didn't happen at Star, which happened at...
At the state training school in Plankinton.
Plankinton, thank you. I forgot the word Plankinton, the town Plankinton there for a minute. Absolutely. All right, Seth Tupper, Jackie Hendry, and Stephanie Rissler, thank you so much for your assistance today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks.